What does it take to become your best?
What does it take to overcome struggle?
And how do we conquer self-doubt and fear?
The chase is on for me. What about the pickup? Have you ever seen a try like that? It's David Mead. David Mead. That is unbelievable.
Welcome to the David Mead Podcast. Each week, I'll be sitting down with current and former athletes, as well as other accomplished individuals, to discover their stories and what it took for them to achieve their success.
Hey guys, welcome back to the David Mead Podcast. On this week's episode, I spoke with Paul Aton. Paulie has been a great friend of mine since we met in the 2008 World Cup when we represented the PNG Kumuls together. During the podcast, Paulie talks about his upbringing in PNG and in Australia, some of the challenges he faced as a kid growing up, and what he wishes he did more of as a professional rugby league player. We had plenty of laughs, and I enjoyed every moment of the conversation. I hope you guys do too.
Not both.
Just you.
Oh, who?
Just you.
Just me?
Go ahead, get still. Oh, this is a joke, I swear.
Oh, jeez.
I was thinking we're out of sync here.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Paulie, mate, welcome to the David Mead Podcast.
Thanks, Meadie. Thanks for having me on.
How you feeling?
A little bit nervous. It's my first one, so.
Yeah? You've never been nervous to talk to me in the past. Why are you nervous now?
Yeah. No, I'm always nervous. I hate hearing my voice back as well, so probably won't watch this either.
Yeah, that's all right. How's life after professional rugby league treating you?
It's been interesting. It's been interesting. I think finished in France. I retired due to some concussions, and then bummed around France for about a year sorting that out. And then Jade and I made the move back to Australia. And then I bummed around here for a little while as well. So just bummed around for a few months. And then I was chatting with Costigan, Neville Costigan, our mutual friend.
Big Nev.
I was chatting with Nev, and he just asked what I was up to and if I wanted to go work in the mines and play a bit of footy there. So ended up up there for about a year. Up there, it was quite interesting. We ended up enjoying ourselves up there, Jade and I. It was quite interesting actually getting out there because, you know, Jade's obviously French. For those of you who don't know, my wife's French. I met her over in France. And we came to Australia, and her first experience of Australia was a small country mining town, coal mining town. So I had never been there as well. So I was like, yeah, no, it's going to be fine, you know, we're in Australia, blah, blah, blah. And as we're driving out there, we left late. So I didn't realize how long it was to get there. It was about 12 hours. So as we're driving out there,
did you look at the maps before you?
Yeah, I'm like, we're sweet. I got it on my phone on the side of the car, like, watching the directions. As we're cruising out there, it started getting dark, and then the road turned to gravel. So we got this. It's Ford Territory, but it's a fake one. You know, it's only two-wheel drive, it's not a four-wheel drive thing. So I'm stressing already because I'm thinking, we get bogged here. I've got my son in the back, my wife, and she's looking at me. I'm going, you know, we're all good. Give it a thumbs up. We're all good. Like, it's, you know, it's we're safe in that. And it's just pitch black, and then it got really dark. And, and then just, you see cows, you know, cows, just the cow's eyes, like red eyes. Like, and we're like, she's like, what's that? What's that? And she's freaking out in the car. I'm like, oh, don't worry. And I'm stressing too because I don't know what it is, you know. So anyway, like there were cows everywhere. And so that was our journey out, and we were still going, and she was terrified going out there. But we ended up making it in the town late at night, and we stayed there for about a year. We made some really good friends. It's a great little town, Warrumbah. No traffic lights or anything, but it was good. It was really good. We enjoyed it, enjoyed ourselves. From there, I was up late one night, and I was scrolling through Instagram on my seven days off from work, scrolling through Instagram, and I had a couple of beers and saw an ad for, you know, PNG RFL put out ads for like work and things like that. And I'd seen a few over that year. We're looking, and I was quite interested to always be back involved. I never really wanted to do anything with footy. I just thought while I was playing, I was like, I want to be far away from footy as possible. Even while I was playing, I was like, oh, I could retire, you know, I just want to do something different. But then when I finished, I was like, man, I shouldn't have retired. It was complete opposite. And then, when you get into the real world and you're working, you're thinking, oh, actually, I had a pretty good back then. For those young footy players out there. So while I was looking through the Instagram, this job came up. And I was like, need an assistant coach or something. So I registered interest, didn't think anything of it. And probably about a week later, the coach emailed me and I was, I'm very, thankful to Matt Church for that. And from there, within 2 weeks, we were back down in Gold Coast and, starting my new role. Or waiting for them to clear quarantine because they're in quarantine for like a month.
Yeah.
2 weeks there at PNG, then 2 weeks here. So, so as soon as I got out, basically straight into a week off and then straight into winning Manly.
Yeah. So you're enjoying that role? Assistant coach, learning a few things?
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah, it's been really good. Yeah, as I said before, I never really wanted to be back involved in footy, as I thought, But there's something with PNG, as you probably know, that you just want to help if you can, We've probably seen over the years playing for Cornwalls. And the only way that I know how to is probably through footy because that's all I've ever done.
Yeah.
So, I feel like I get some gratification from that.
Yeah. For those that don't know you too well, can you tell us a bit about your background, life before rugby league, where you grew up and were you born in PNG?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you?
Yeah. yes, I was.
Joke,
yes.
I think. we make fun of our accents. We are both born in PNG, but we obviously sound Australian, so we make jokes about it with each other.
So where were you born and what was growing up like?
Well, I guess I'd probably start with because my father's Australian, so my mum's full Papua New Guinean, and my father was 18 when he moved to PNG to work, and he ended up staying there 23 years. So at one stage, he was more one way than he was more Papua New Guinean. In a sense than the other. And then he stayed there. Whatever the courting thing is they did. But they met. I was born in Mount Hagen Hospital. And we travelled around because Dad was in roadworks and construction. So we travelled around probably till I was about six. And then my dad was ill with tuberculosis. So he got that and he almost died, but it left him unable to do much, like even struggles, to this day. Just walk a certain distance. I remember when I was young, he could walk a certain distance, but then he'd be just wrecked after because what happens is it eats away at your lungs and you can't regenerate it, not like your liver. So that put a big toll and we had to move. That's the reason why we had to move to Australia for him because couldn't really work. So that's the reason why we ended up moving. So there was five kids, my mum and dad, and only my dad could speak English. None of us could speak English. So we moved to, had some family that were living in Caboolture and Morayfield, my dad's brothers at the time. So that's why we moved to that area. And then, so that's how we got to Australia, and I remember going to school. That was interesting because I couldn't speak English, so I had no idea what was going on. But I never reflected on this. Like I only started reflecting on it probably these last few years. I never, never thought back on that and on that time. And but now thinking back, it was pretty hard. I think it was harder for my mum because she couldn't speak English, so she didn't leave the house for like 7 years. Wow. She just had – because she was petrified. She was just scared, like she, So Dad would have to go and do everything. So, I remember thinking back, I think that's sort of how I got into footy because I was going to school. I couldn't make any friends because I couldn't obviously speak any English, and I couldn't understand because at that particular time. So for those who don't know, like Tokpisin is our, I guess everyone speaks Tokpisin in PNG. Yep. But inside of that, there's all these dialects and languages, as you know, or for those who don't know, there's, I don't know, 800 or whatever, changes all the time.
Yeah,
the number changes all the time. Yeah. But there's, yeah. There's a lot. Yeah. So in my mum's village, there's one, and then in my grandmother's village, there's one, and it's a different dialect from my grandfather's.
Yeah.
It's a completely different dialect. So I was starting to learn that as you know, my mum was speaking that to me as, you know, around six. But when I went to school, so I was far from English, and I think it was hard. I think I got teased a lot or made fun of. I can't remember now.
How old were you then?
Six.
Yeah.
Six, yeah, because I couldn't. Because I didn't have, you know, certain clothes or whatever, so it was difficult at the time. I didn't reflect on this till way back, so I just put it at the back. I don't know.
Is it your kid? You just...
Yeah, I just got on with it, maybe if I understood, maybe I would have been hurt, but yeah, I didn't.
Yeah.
I didn't understand, so... So, yeah, there's one... I remember one kid befriended me. One thing that I do remember was really upsetting I remember getting teased a little bit, but I remember catching the bus this particular day, this bus, and we were supposed to drop me off. I was supposed to get off at a certain bus stop, and I'm new, so I don't know what's going on. But I just remember, right, that's my spot. And I remember because I was that shy because, you know, all these kids, the whole bus was full, and I was like, and I was watching my stop go past, and I was like, he's supposed to drop me off. You know, and I was that upset. I started crying. I was just watching it, reaching out for it. But it dropped me all the way. So we were living up near, on Caboolture Road or whatever it was, but near, in the city. But it dropped me like so many Ks away in Centenary Lakes, as you know, that area. But I didn't know where I was, never seen it before, but I knew it was that way. So I was just walking home like this, crying. I was 6 years old, and Mum was like terrified, and she was hardly leaving the house, so she was like looking out, coming in. But yeah, that was a memorable time for me. That's when I remember, oh yeah, didn't have the best. And then I started thinking back, and these are my first thoughts of Australia, by the way. So so there's another thought actually of Australia. So we get taught in school about these cuddly koalas. I've told this a few times. Drunk and I make noises, but it's actually a true story. So here I am learning about these koalas at school, and then I remember we're in the house. It was late at night, and I heard this like noises outside. It was like like this, and I was like, I'm in PNG in the bush. I don't need these noises. So here I am, I'm at the thing trying to look outside, like, what's going on? And all this sudden, the dad's like, stay inside. Stay inside, kids. I'm going outside. So he goes outside. Next minute, I heard the noise again. And there was, like, my dad was ugly. My dad going, fuck, you know, swearing like this. And I'm like, fuck, what's going on? Like, you know. And he comes in. His shirt's all ripped. He's got blood everywhere. And I was like, what's this? He goes, it's an effing koala. And I was like, what? I was like, what? They're not the ones that we look in the picture books, you know, they're all cuddly. And everyone's like, cuddly. Anyway, he goes, stay in here. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going. It was pitch black. He goes and gets a towel. And then he's going back out there, and I hear it again. This bear sort of thing, or noise, like a vicious noise, you know? And anyway, he captures it. He brings in his blood. Like he had like a pajama shirt on. It was all ripped through, blood, like a claw mark like that. And I was like, oh my goodness. This place is nuts, you know? Like, anyway, but I just thought I'd share them. My first
memories of Australia.
First thoughts of Australia. And I was, mum's like, she's always, because I don't know if it's from PNG, but just I was always outside. There's little trees and bushes there. So I was always out, like, climbing trees and falling out of them. And yeah. So that was my first thoughts of, first thoughts for Australia. And I befriended a little kid befriended me, and he was like, I couldn't understand him. So he was just, he must have got the t-shirt, asked my parents if I can go play this game called rugby league. And then they were like, oh, it might be good for him to meet, make friends. So that's how I got into footy. I went to play for Caboolture Snakes. And then I remember I took the ball, I ran, everyone was just pointing, you know, because I didn't know what was going on. They were just going like that way. So I was running, and I think because they were mixed teams, so this girl just cleaned me up. I think I might have even been concussed then. I don't know, but it was, yeah, I remember it was bad, but then I loved it. Didn't stop playing since.
Did you watch a bit of league back in PNG? Do you remember it? Six is pretty young, so.
Yeah, no, I didn't remember. I was just out. I remember in PNG, I remember this is what I remember. I remember going out with the boys, with all the other little kids, and just not worrying, like not going back for anything. Like we just drank where they drink, you know, where the clean water is. I remember climbing trees to get bird eggs to have something to eat. I cooked them. And grasshoppers and all these good, you know, they're all memories that I have of back then.
No adults helping you, just the kids.
We're just going out foraging and just hanging out and doing all that just by ourselves. And yeah, that's my memories. No one had TV, so it was just fire. I remember huts being inside, like, you know, this where I'm from. There's a hut where you sleep, and then there's a different one for a kitchen. And I remember just, you know, that was good memories. Like, I actually took my wife there when she to my village, and she experienced a little bit of that.
Yeah. So you grew up proper jungle.
Yeah. It was, story, yeah. Until I was, six. And then that's why I think it was such a big change, because I really don't know if my dad was planning to come back.
Yeah.
I don't think he was, but so it wasn't like, oh, we've got to teach him English. We've got to try to, you know, learn different things, but that's why I think it was so hard and challenging.
Yeah.
No, I didn't think of it much at the time, but now looking back.
Yeah. Because my memories of growing up PNG, I feel like I was, you know, in a modern mansion when you say that story about, you know, the huts and stuff, because in our village there's, you know, the houses are built on stilts and four bedrooms, a family living in each. A bit of a different type of setting there.
Were you on the water?
Our village is on the water, but half the village is on water, half's on land. So we lived on the land. But it's a coastal village.
Is that Hunabada or is that?
Tubusera. So 30 minutes from Port Moresby. Mm. And, you know, my memory, I lived there for 12 years, so a lot of my memories growing up were in the village there. But, you know, when you're talking about the getting the eggs and cooking a six-year-old, you know, when we were at that age, we were, you know, trapping birds, setting up traps for birds, making slingshots. This is no adult supervision.
Yeah.
So this is as kids in the village. This is what you do to your parents are out working, or they're at the house, and as kids you leave the house and you go do these things. And, you know, when you get hungry, you're trying to – it's exciting to set up a slingshot and, you know, try and get your own food, you know. And these kids, you know, between the ages of 5 to 11 – 12 years old, learning how to, you know, essentially hunt food for themselves. You know, I find that something that's, you know, they wouldn't think about it as different. It's normal to them. Yeah. It's a lot different to, you know, what's experienced over here. But, you know, they're great memories growing up, eh?
Yeah.
When did you want to become a NRL player?
I think I always, maybe, as a junior, I was always wanted to play it. Probably when I got into high school, I was like, yeah, I want to – because, you know, they show you different careers, what you can do. And I don't know – yeah, it's still a little bit foggy, that part of it. I remember – because I remember saying to a teacher, no, I'm gonna play footy. And she laughed at me. She was like – she laughed at me and said, you're not going to play footy. You're going to be in college, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Something like that. Miss Casey, I think. And yeah, I remember you.
Holding your grudge much there, Paulie.
Yeah. No, it's not, I think I know, it's her, but yeah. But, you know, it's often the thing, eh? Someone tells you can't do something, and you just, it's Miss Casey from Caboolture High at the time, that to me. And that I was only in like grade 8 or 9 or something like that.
Yeah.
And, Yeah, I remember. Yeah, even my mate Travis, remember when she said that? I was like, yeah, I do remember when she said that. So
that's cool.
I had that a lot, I guess, because I used to be a fullback back when I was younger. So yeah, even the coach said something like that because at the time I think Melbourne and Parramatta was giving out a lot of gear contracts to kids, and I remember all these kids were getting one, and I think my dad was like, oh, you could see maybe that's what I wanted to do, and then he ended up asking the coach, oh, do you think like he's got a chance? Like, what does he need to do, as a parent probably would if their child was wanting to do something. And he goes, nah, Paulie's got no chance. But he never told me that. He told me that later. But, I guess you get that a lot, growing up. But, I forget the question.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's good sharing that because, it just reminded me me growing up.
Yeah.
There's a main reason why I started the podcast is, youth empowerment. Talking about social issues, talking about belief, trying to get lessons that you've learned and share it with people, in Australia, PNG, Pacific, or, anywhere around the world. That, for me as a kid, I had a dream to play NRL at 6, 7 years, as far back as I can remember. My uncle used to make me wear St. George Dragons shirt and, talk about his team. And I was like, man, one day I'm going to play this game. And it just, that feeling was like, yep, it's going to happen. Nothing's going to get in the way.
Yep.
And then, but high school, you get into high school and then you start to hear things that are said that create a bit of doubt,
yep.
A bit of fear in your mind, And I feel like, I'm trying to get some lessons into that, how people can overcome that type of fear and doubt. For me, I heard a lot of things like you got to make rep teams, and I wasn't making rep teams. You got to be skillful. You got to be big, strong. All those things I didn't have. So then the doubt creeps in.
Yeah.
That dream starts to get further and further away.
Yep.
So interesting hearing your story about Miss Casey.
Yeah.
Telling me, you're not going to play football. Yeah. That's a...
She always scoffed.
Yeah.
When you use that word. She scoffed at me. So I was like, it's just bad.
That's going to be good for your belief.
Yeah. But I think what you said about yourself, you're too small, wasn't making rep teams, all these things are all part of it as well. But I just felt like I was going to.
Was there a moment you remember in high school that made you go, actually, no, you know what? I am going to make it. Always have doubts and fears?
There's only one thing that almost made me stop is because I wanted to go to the army. A few of my other cousins, they were in the army. And I remember when we first came to Australia, we stayed at certain uncle's places and I, their kids are in the army and doing stuff like that. And then I was watching 60 Minutes, the French Foreign Legion come on. I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. That sounds awesome. That's what I wanted to do. Told my parents, that's what I'm doing. Dad's like, come on, mate, just keep playing footy. And got to the thing where I went to the recruitment place and got the form at high school and I had a field out and I was like, I need, because it was a reserves or something and I was too young. I needed their permission or I wanted to ask for their permission for them to, one bell and let me go sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I took it to Dad and we had a massive fight, it was a massive fight. And that was probably the only thing that I nearly stopped. But other than that, I always thought, that's what I'm going to do. I didn't care what anyone said.
Yeah.
As long as I was moving forward, that was the most important.
Was that always natural for you? Like that whole, I don't care what anyone says, I'm going to do it anyway.
Probably because I'm stubborn, maybe. Yeah. not really. I do reflect a lot. So, I don't know. I think it's just maybe parents help me have that belief. I don't know, just to keep pushing for better.
Because, not a lot of kids, teenagers have that type of certainty or the belief in themselves. I know I certainly didn't. I was always, fearful of what others are going to think of me, what others say, that type of stuff. And it was until I got I was playing for a team and the coach, found a coach. He used to give me lifts from Lismore to Tweed 3 days a week and just the chats we would have in the car. And the main thing he said was, put the work in, good things can happen. And so he kind of installed the belief in my mind. And so I feel like I was lucky that I got to meet him, and he was able to help me, you know, create that belief in myself again that I could make it. So I feel like if I didn't meet him, my life's probably gone in a different direction rather than following my dreams. Is there any advice you have for, you know, a kid like me who felt that way, or kids that are having doubts, fears about, and they're hearing all this negative stuff around them at school, home? Have you got any advice for them and how to overcome that?
Oh, geez, I've never thought about this before. It's hard because I'm just, yeah, I'm trying to answer your question, but then I'm thinking, well, I'd say try to be around good, you know, certain people like that, the coach, but then for a young person, how would they find that? So I think goal setting is quite important. So, I mean, yeah, if you have your goal, maybe write it down and work out what steps you need to get there. And that's probably, you got to be ruthless in that mentality. Like, I'm going to get, you know, that kind of mentality. It's a hard thing because it's easy to say, you got to do this, got to do that, got to be around good people. But if you don't have good people, like I had my parents that were always pushing me. If you don't have that, like, what are you going to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where do you get that? If you didn't have that coach, how are you going to get that question that you asked me? Like, how?
Yeah.
What would you say?
Me, the answer you gave is similar to what I think, because getting around good people, I think, is the number one thing.
Yeah.
You know, goal setting, I think those people do help you with goal setting and stuff like that. So I feel like when I was at that age and I had the coach, I was very lucky. So for young kids, I find that, you know, have those doubts and fears, I think listening to your coach, join a sporting team or join any type of club that's in town or whatever you want to do, you know, getting around people who have done it before or who know how to help you, I think that's the number one thing. So key factor around helping you get past those doubts and fears.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. Yeah, that's what that was probably was going to be my first thing to think. But I'm thinking, you know, for young kids these days, that might be hard to do. You know, if you don't have parents that are positive or, you know, behind you, and your group of friends aren't very good, you know, might have to cut them loose, or not your parents,
yeah.
You know, like maybe your group of friends or something like that.
Yeah. And it's not easy, is it?
No, it's not. I'm just trying to put myself in that position, what I would do. But, yeah, most definitely, who you hang around is very influential.
Yeah. A little bit about more your footy career in your early days. What did you do for training and stuff outside of? Did you ever do training by yourself? Outside of team training?
Yep. I was hungry. Like, I heard there was some training up the coast. Can't remember who was holding it now. It was extra training. And I made sure I was at that, did extra training by myself. Just did anything that I heard, or, you know, if I heard someone was doing something, well, I've got to do that because, you know, that's going to help me get to where I want to go. Yeah, I just pretty much did. That was before I went there, you mean? Before I went down to Sydney, or?
Yep, any time.
Yeah, all throughout I did extra time, extra training. I think on reflection, I wish that I had done, after playing first grade, and I wish that I had probably done more, like more training outside of what I'm supposed to be doing.
What type of training?
More individual and more probably study of the game, I'd say. You know, whatever game or sport that you want to do, be a student of it. And
is that like
watching videos, taking notes? Because I enjoyed playing. And I wish now that I'm having an assistant coach role and I have to study the game more and I have to watch, actually sit down and cut the game and dissect it and watch it, I wish I did that while I was playing, because I think it would have helped me. not saying I would have done anything different, but just for me to understand what I'm doing better, and I could have been better, you know, because you always want to be better. I like to think that everyone always wants to be better, and I think that would have helped me if I did that. Because I was all the way up until I played first grade, I was like, I'm gonna play. I think I wrote down when I moved to Sydney, and I wrote down, put my goals on my where my bed is above, like next to my bed, and I was like, I think I'm gonna play for Cumals. I'm gonna debut Cumals, rookie of the year, all these things that I want to do that year, and I got every single one of them. And then after that, I was like, oh, I made it. You know, I didn't reset my goals.
Yeah,
you know, like you got to keep wanting to be better. Where I as soon as I, and it's probably taken until I finished to actually understand that, where I've done that, and then my next goal was I want to go to another club. So I sort of played well to go to another club. Then I want to go to England. So got to England, and I had goals there in England, and then I achieved all those goals in that year. So then I just cruised for a while. Then I want to go to France, and you know, every time I didn't keep resetting and wanting to be better. I just like did enough to go to where I wanted to go, but I didn't have that the thought process to go, you know what, I'm here now. Well, how can I get better this way? But I didn't do that, and I wish I did do that while I was playing.
Now that I'm kind of the back end of my career, I feel like exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
I wish I studied the game more because, you, as you said, you can always do better. You always want to do better. And these are ways that you can do better, you know, watching video, talking to coaches, talking to your teammates. Yep. Now, you know, when we're around footy, we're training, and then you know, our lunch break, we don't really do extra. Oh, some guys do, but it's like it's a lunch break, so you just want to have a casual chat.
Yeah.
And then you go do your weights. Yeah. After that, you're going home, not really thinking about the extra stuff.
Yes.
But what I'm learning as I'm getting older is the guys who do watch those videos, do take notes, you know, they're the ones who seem to be at the – yeah. The level just above everyone else.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So let's talk about your Cumals debut.
Yes.
Do you remember the first phone call? Do you remember your?
I remember. I moved to Penrith. Played really well that year. That was a year before my goals that I wrote down and what I wanted to achieve. So. I was playing really well, and I remember Peter Mulholland brought me into his office. He goes, "You might have a chance at Junior Kangaroos, or you have a chance at Cumals, PNG Cumals." He said, "Look, this is what I'm hearing." Blah blah blah. And I was like, "Oh," he goes, "What do you want to do? Like, what do you want to push for, or whatever?" And I was like, "Oh, probably Cumals, like you know, because I think maybe." I don't know, you know, I think I'm not sure why I really wanted to do that. Maybe it was because it felt like that was still sort of home, you know, home, and also, you know, watching, I think back in the 90s, I was doing like backflip tries and, you know, just love watching the Cumals play. So anyway, I made that decision. Nothing else was spoken of. I got a call from Bob Bennett. And it was a game up at Townsville. Townsville's a PM13 game. So the Aussie team was actually a mixed team of the play, like young and actual Kangaroos of that team that Mullen was telling me about, the Junior Kangaroos. So they were playing each other. So we got pumped like 76-6, something like that. But yeah, it was just being in camp. It just felt right. Like I just. Probably the best. By that stage, I've been in that many footy camps. That was the best camp I've ever had, and every Cumals camp since has been like. After that camp, I was like, I can't wait till next year. Then my goals were like, yeah, first grade. But then it was like, oh, next Cumals. I want to make the next. That was all my. That was always just want to make the next Cumals camp, just because I enjoyed it that much.
What year was that? The first one.
2005.
Was Marcus Bai still playing? Did you play a game with Marcus?
He was. Oh, actually, I think he played that.
Yeah. Because Marcus, he was one of my favorite players growing up. So I was wondering, like, just watching how hard he runs, you know? I just, wondering what he was like in camp. Because, you know, when we have him in camp, he's a.
I think he was. But I played with him, but it wasn't that year. wasn't that year. It was later.
Yeah.
That year I think we had Stanley Gainer.
Yeah.
From England.
I played a game, a couple of games with Stanley. Yeah. He's a great character.
Yeah, he's a top player, man. Wow. Yeah, he's played with him, coached by him. He's a good guy. But he came from England. I think two. I don't know if McKelly came from England. It was such a long time ago. But yeah, everything. I was like, eyes open. It was awesome.
What's it like when you put that Kummels jersey on and they run out for him? Is it the same feeling every time?
Yeah. It just feels so much pride. Like, you know, you always hear people saying, "Oh, 8 million people behind you," but you feel like that. You feel like there's that many people behind you and supporting you. And, you know, that's how it feels every time I put it on. So, probably one of the best feelings is when, you know, when we used to go to the PRL, the old one, we'd sing the anthem.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably, I don't know if we don't really do that anymore. All the people would be lined up and we're all singing the national anthem as we're driving the bus and that many people smashing the bus.
That's on game day?
Game day, sorry.
Yeah.
In PRL.
The old PRL. Yeah.
That's probably the best feeling. Because now, I don't know, for those who don't know, we couldn't get in there. How many blocks away from the stadium? Like, we just couldn't get in. There was that many people. We had sirens. Well, then Liam would get us to sing the anthem, and it was an awesome feeling. But we're not like that anymore.
It's a bit the stadium's set up. There's, police block the roads off
yeah,
a few hundred metres away, and no one comes up to the bus and shakes the bus or anything.
No, they don't do that anymore. Probably just be disappointed. It was just made it. Yeah, I guess that'll be our memories that we'll always have. Because I don't think it'll be like that anymore.
Yeah, I'm glad I got to experience that because that was my first. I was 19 when I.
Yeah, I remember when you, David.
Yeah, I played in that. We called it internationals versus residents.
Yeah,
and we were playing as the internationals. It was in 2008. Before the World Cup, it was a trial game to play. And I remember turning up to the stadium on the training day the first time. The boys were like, "Mate, just wait till game day. You'll see." I remember you and Rod telling me about this, Rod Griffin, saying, "Mate, wait till you see the game day and what it's like. You'll never see anything like it." And our first training day, the ground was like rock hard. There is grass, but underneath that grass, the pebbles are rocks.
Yeah.
That training, you're leaving training with grazers, all that stuff. And so that first week of training, yeah, we got our training. I was thinking, mate, this ground's hard. And the boys are saying, mate, just be careful when you run out because, you know, they come shooting out of nowhere. And, you know, when you catch the ball, just expect to get hit, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, man, this is going to be fun. Yeah. And so I remember that first trial game. It was about, you know, I don't know how far into the game it was. I remember one of the boys, Charlie Wobble, he just grabbed me. He's only a hooker, not that big, 85, 90 odd kilos.
Yeah.
But he grabbed me, swung me around and head straight into the ground. I felt how hard that ground was that day. And I got to experience what the boys are talking about in terms of how hard these guys hit because I used to dread that game, eh?
Yeah.
Like I'd played NRL, but going up and playing against the residence boys in PNG. I used to think, I just already know there's going to be corks on my body.
Yeah.
Did you have the same?
Yeah, 100%. I had to play one recently. Not recently, not as far back as that. Before the World Cup in England.
Oh, the 2013 one?
Yeah, 2013 one, yeah. Because I think I was coming back from England. I was coming back from England and we were still talking about pays and all this stuff and there was a thing saying, we're not going to play or something unless we're about player payments. Anyway, so I'm like, yeah, look, I'm in, boys. I'm rock solid. Next minute, Lenny rings me and goes, mate, if you're not here, you're not playing this, if you're not playing this possible probables game, you won't be in. I was like, what? Oh, come on. Like, come on, please. You know, I was like so upset, man. I was like, sorry, boys, man. I'm going. I got to go. So I jumped on the plane and flew over there and had to play that. And that was, that was interesting. But, yeah, they were, as you described, that's how it was. And Nigel Hakula was the coach of our with the red team. So and we won. So that was
nice. You played in 3 World Cups?
Yes.
08, 2013, 17. Which one's your favorite?
08.
Any reason?
It felt right. Like it was a good mix. It was a good mix of players, all good guys. I felt we were much closer then than we are the Kamuls of nowadays, you know. We just felt more closer. Like I think that year Lamy did a really good job of doing that. We did a lot of things to make us stronger and tighter as a team, and I think he had a big hand in doing that, and he put on a really good World Cup. I think, man, we should have beat England, eh?
That would have been a good day.
Yeah.
In Townsville.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Yeah, just felt tighter as a group.
Well, what's been the hardest moment of your career so far?
There's been a few. Obviously finishing, retiring, that was hard because I didn't get to do it how I wanted to. Probably breaking my arm before, because I was playing for Leeds Rhinos, and I broke my arm last minutes of the game. I don't know why. We're playing Warrington. I think it was Warrington. Ashton Sims was running the ball, and I was just like, you know, I'm gonna run up and do something here. So I've shot out of the line and like swung my arm, probably PNG styles. I don't know. Just went like swung my arm, and I broke my own arm on his leg, and it was on his knee, and it was there's no need to. I didn't have to do it, and that's probably the most frustrating thing. And that was for me because that year I played every game. I think we won nearly every game. The following weekend was the Challenge Cup. For those who don't know, Challenge Cup is quite big over there. And that was a week before the Challenge Cup, and then after that they won league leaders and the grand final, so it's a treble. So it was like only a couple of teams have done that. So I missed out on that. Probably the other disappointing time is probably retiring, because that was you know, things never go to plan, and you just think you can do something forever. And that's probably another thing for people, just to never take things for granted. Because I retired from concussions 2018 as well. And then we won the Challenge Cup
for
Dragons that year as well.
Yeah.
So, but I wasn't good. I think you were helping me write my concussions and when I had them, and because I had to write them down or something.
Yeah.
I remember asking you, like, yeah, that game you did. I was like, oh, yeah, that's good. Because my wife was like, because I'd come home and then she'd tell me something, like, oh, you got to do this, got to do cooking, or we're going to cook or something. I'd come home and I'd order food, or she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, you know, just all over the place. Because when I first started, to get a concussion, it was
play on.
Yeah, like no one like carried on about it. Not carried on, but you know what I mean? But now it's in a better place, like looking after the players. But yeah, so that's sort of because I had to retire because of that. And I was having my son, and I didn't want to, you know, I was like, man, if I'm forgetting things now, like all this stuff was going on with American NFL players, and I was like, oh, well, just stop.
Yeah.
So yeah, just sort of fizzled out. Like I didn't really retire, just fizzled.
Yeah.
But I'll wait a little while, then I'll go back. But then I was in the south of France, drinking red wine, having cheese. You know, I was like, next minute I knew a year had gone past, and I was like,
yeah. How's it all gone, the concussion stuff for you?
Yeah, oh, it's good. It's still, much better. Like, yeah, I needed that time off because it got to the point where it wasn't even by the head. I just go to tackle something like chest on and just that impact like that. I was
going
like that just from that, and I was like, I didn't really pay attention until all this stuff happened. Then I started like trying to, I'm out there. That probably is not good, you know.
Yeah.
Because you don't learn to look for these things if you're used to it. But since then it's been good. It's been really good. And, transition has been all right. It was hard at first, but it's good now. So.
What are your thoughts on how the game's handling the concussions now?
Oh, much better. Really good. Yeah, really good. I think I'm all for player welfare, and probably because I went through it. And if they know something, they have to do something. Like they can't know, and they're going to have the same problem as NFL. So, because I went through it, I think 100% look after the player first. Yeah, I probably would have been kicking and screaming if I was younger, you know, wanting to play and do all this. But in, at the end of the day, when you're old, for example, I was playing for Leeds. We're playing against Warrington at Warrington, and I got concussed and I come off, and the doctor came out and he said, "Oh, what happened?" I was out a bit, and from that he took me straight off because it was a concussion. He had to do a thing. I'm like, "No, I'm okay. I didn't mean to say that." He goes, "No, you're off," and I hated him for it. Like he took me into the dressing sheds, and you know I'm barely remembering what day it is as it is because I'm not focusing on what day it is. And he's asking me the questions, and I'm like, I'm supposed to stand on one foot, but I've got boots on, you know, like,
yeah.
And I'm falling over, like, and I'm like, mate, I can't even do it, you know. And he's like, nah, you're out. And I was like, I was filthy at him. I was like that mad at the doctor. But now in hindsight, I'm like, you know what, he did the right thing. Like, yeah. And I think that's similar to what's happening. Like, it is a hard crackdown, yeah, but 50 years from now, when these players are a lot older, they're probably not even going to know, but they should be thankful for the crackdown. It's only going to protect them, like at the end of the day. So,
yeah. Where do you see yourself in the next 10 years? Have you set any goals for that?
No, this has been rattling through my mind for since I finished with probably a year. I've been thinking of what goals to achieve, I'm definitely going to put it down, but I think. Because when I finished footy, it was quite difficult to transition from playing to not playing and actually, I have to work now, you know, that kind of thinking where I never thought I would have to. So I'm yet to set those goals, I think, but I'll be definitely setting my goals. Probably for the next five-year goals, I think, yearly.
I was going to ask you, what would you do differently if you could relive your career and – knowing what you know now, but that's probably to do with like, doing your studies, doing your videos.
Yeah.
Taking notes. Is there anything else you would do differently?
Yeah, probably. I'd definitely that. I think we spoke earlier about the being more of a student of the game as well, not just, yeah, I play the sport and I'm professional. So be more of a student of the game. And I would say probably partying. I'd say I probably wouldn't do as much, I'd say. Like, it wasn't over the top. It was always after games. But, mate, you got the rest of your life to do all that. Like, I could do that, you know, tomorrow. When I retired, I did. So, but you got the rest of your life to do that. So I probably wouldn't do it as much. Probably be a lot more focused. And because I've thought about it a lot, and I'd definitely, yeah, be more of a student of the game and probably pay a little less. And you're only in your sport or whatever for a short amount of time or even life in general. And you just, yeah, I think I wasted a lot of days hungover, so probably that'd be my advice to myself again.
It's a bit of a, I don't know if it's a deep question, but we'll give it a go, see what your thoughts on it.
Deep.
Yeah. As you have grown up, what's becoming less important to you and what's becoming more important?
Yeah. But definitely family has become a lot more important. I think I was speaking earlier about I think just feeling like I could go, you know, I've got things more about myself. So less about myself and more about my family, I'd say. Because, you know, probably when I was young, it was all about myself. I had to do this. I had to go there. I'm going to live in PNG. I'm going to do all these other things. And now that I've got a son, it's more important to make sure he's happy and be stable for him. So, yeah, I'd say probably that, I think.
And what are you looking forward to now?
Looking forward to? More kids, probably. More kids. Looking forward to learning more about my new role. And just looking forward to being able to hopefully help the play, like with my new role, probably help players if I can. I enjoy that. It's good being like feeling like you're helping someone. So, yeah, I look forward to that.
As we're getting closer to wrapping up the podcast, just a few fun things about you, a few rapid fire questions.
Yeah.
Do you like Betel Nut?
No, but I've chewed it.
Yeah?
I'll chew it again.
Hey, you do it again?
Anytime.
Yeah. What's your favourite meal?
Lamb flaps.
Lamb flaps?
Yeah.
So lamb flaps for those that don't know?
Oh, yeah. It's like lamb ribs, hey?
Yeah.
Like lamb ribs and they're like heavily, it's not healthy, so don't. It's not healthy. It's heavily deep fried, and you can have it with like watercress or ginger. I love ginger, so I'd have it with ginger. Heavily deep fried, yeah.
Yeah, really they're delicious.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
How many times have we
– plenty of – when we're in PNG camp, there's, yeah. We've got to make sure we get a couple of those a few times a week. So I look forward to that. Yeah. Favorite musician?
Oh, geez. I listen to everything. So I'm not – I don't have a favorite. No, I listen to everything. I'm country to rap, to dance hall sometimes. Yeah, a bit of everything. I listen to everything. Country a lot lately, actually. Country a lot.
Do you have any favorite books or favorite book?
Books. My brother-in-law is laughing because I've got a lot. No, my bookcase ranges from self-help through to health and management, business leadership. All that, yeah, probably got a few hundred, I think.
Do you have a spirit animal?
Do I have one?
Yeah. Are you? If you're an animal, what would you be?
Koala.
You know what?
I can't believe that also aggressive.
I think that's a great way to wrap up this podcast, Paulie. Thanks for being on the show, mate. I appreciate your time. Appreciate your stories. It's been great. I look forward to hopefully having another chat in the near future.
Yeah, anytime. You're doing well. Thanks, mate. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Thanks very much.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love if you would hit that subscribe button, leave a comment or a review, and share it with anyone you think might enjoy it as well. For more behind-the-scenes content, head to my Instagram at davidmead411 and feel free to slide into my DMs if there's anyone you would love to hear from. I can't wait to bring you another episode next week, and thanks for listening to the David Mead Podcast.